Hi everyone, welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. My name is Fei Yu. I'm the Managing Director Europe at Alco Global. Today, we have the pleasure to welcome Marcus Reckling. Marcus is Managing Director of DHL Express Germany, with DHL Express being the leading international courier company and part of the leading international logistic provider Deutsche Post DHL Group. Marcus has worked for the group for more than 20 years, holding different positions, including Head of Corporate Development and Managing Director of DHL Express Turkey, experience in leadership as well as in finding individual solutions for different tasks. Marcus enjoys to share and discuss his learnings. On June 1st, Marcus will move on within the group's big logistic universe and will take over the role as Chief Sales Officer, Post and Parcel. Marcus, great to have you here with us and congratulations on the promotion.
Thanks a lot and thanks for the congratulations. So it's going to be an exciting new chapter in my life and happy to be here today.
Yeah, I see that you are in a very shiny yellow DHL t-shirt and then on your back, it looks like a very interesting background. Could you share with us why this appearance?
I'm more than happy to do that. First of all, today is the 17th of May, which is the so-called Ida Hobbit Day. So this is the International Day Against Homophobia, Bisexual Phobia, and Transsexual Phobia. So it's an important day for diversity. And, you know, DHL is one of the most international companies in the world, being present in more than 220 countries. Diversity is in our DNA, and we really, really appreciate diversity. We try to really create diverse teams. So I am also supporting the community by promoting diversity today. And this is why you see me wearing our so-called DHL Pride logo. So the logo in the LGBTIQ colors. That explains maybe why I'm wearing such a funny t-shirt today. And as regards to the background, yes, this is, of course, a photo print on the wall in the meeting room behind me, and it shows the inside of a cargo airplane. So all of you probably know what you see behind me with a lot of seats and a bit more of windows and stuff in there. But when it transports cargo instead of people, this is what it looks like then.
Amazing story. It's a great start. And I love that. I wish I'd have a t-shirt like that soon.
I'm more than happy to provide one to you. So we'll make sure that you receive one of our Pride shirts.
So thanks a lot, Marcus.
You're and most welcome.
On that note, right? So we talk about your career and the big promotion. Please share with us your career story at DHL. How did you get started in the logistic industry? What led you to your career, current positions as an executive?
I mean, originally it was really still when Deutsche Post DHL was still Deutsche Post, and it was in the beginning of 2000. So basically just after waking up from celebrating the year 2000. And then I started at what was then called Deutsche Post, and it was the days of the first e-commerce hype. It was called e-business at the days and the new markets and everything. And Deutsche Post tried to figure out what role could it play in this first e-business wave. And that's how I ended up in a team of people looking at all kinds of things and that. So in the beginning, it wasn't really so much of a logistics career, and I was dealing with all kinds of e-business ideas. Ended up managing a joint venture together with Lufthansa called Trimondo, where we were optimizing procurement processes actually via the new internet methods. And of course, we all know how the story went. The first e-business wave didn't really take off like the second one then, probably 10, 15 years later, did. So then after a while, I returned back to Deutsche Post and was a few years in, we would call the shared services of Deutsche Post, dealing with fleet management, real estate management, and other things. And during those days, got to know Frank Appel quite well, you know, our long-term CEO who just left. And so when he became the new CEO, he asked me whether I would want to do corporate development for him, so strategy and M&A and similar things. So and from there, after a few years, you know, I felt it was time, you know, enough of PowerPoints and other things in my world. I want to get down to the real business, and I wanted to do something with a bit of an emerging market background, so fast moving, dynamic, but due to private situation, it still needed to be within a 3-hour flying distance of Europe. And so I got the opportunity to head our DHL Express business in Turkey, which was in the early 2013. So for 4 years I spent in Turkey, demanding but amazing time, and I still love Turkey. But I got the interesting days of Turkey with the big bombings in Ankara, with the military coup. So all that happened during my days in Turkey. But still, I think Turkey had a long-term impact on my leadership style, especially, you know, I would say completing it. In Deutsche Post DHL, we have a framework about head, heart, and guts. And I think on the head and on the guts part, I was always fairly strong, but probably the heart muscle needed some practice and some training. And Turkey was the ideal boot camp for my heart muscle and for rounding up my leadership profile to what I consider to be myself nowadays. And then, of course, I was very proud that after 4 years, I was asked, you know, to lead one of our largest countries in the DHL Express network. And for the last 6.5 years, I've been leading DHL Express Germany. And I think, you know, also very intense years, you know, shortly after I arrived, we had the big virus attack on TNT, which basically threw up the entire industry because the volumes of one player suddenly went to all the other players for a certain time. And we called it, it was Christmas in summer, because normally during Christmas time, you have the most busy weeks of the year. But our volumes in summer, where you usually have the lowest ones, were the highest ones. In those days, you know, you had, of course, the pandemic. You, of course, had the Brexit. And, of course, you know, you lately had the high inflation year. So it was an interesting time. But I think it was an incredibly successful time for the team. And I'm very proud, you know, that together with the team, we were making them so successful. So we basically doubled our revenue and we doubled our EBIT. And I think we're all most proud to the fact that we're now for the first time certified also in Germany. And it's the first German entity within the group at a great place to work. And we've actually just been a few weeks ago been named one of the best places to work in Germany by the Great Place to Work Institute. And, you know, given our strategy at DHL Express, which focuses on that motivated people create a great service quality, then creates loyal customers, and loyal customers finally create a profitable network. So given that, you know, and that, you know, this is an external sign that, you know, the motivated people topic really paid off. That one we're really, really proud of.
So what I heard, right, it's a lot of passion in the logistics sector, a lot of passion to embrace challenges. And it doesn't sound to me that your career now is really well planned. You just embrace new challenge, get yourself out of comfort zone. I also heard a lot of experience in on the shop floor, team leadership, getting a right mentor. So these are the elements I heard.
Definitely, you've got it correct. I mean, passion and curiosity, I think, are two traits that have always been within me. And, you know, the curiosity always led me to learn fast and to accept new challenges. You know, one of my projects in the shared services world was selling a portfolio of 1,400 pieces of property to a US hedge fund for €1 billion. And that being a guy who had never sold a single piece of property in his life before or later on, you know, not knowing much about Express, not having a clue about Turkey, thinking, you know, I'd be able to be the country manager of DHL Express in Turkey. So challenges and cold water somehow always attracted me. And, you know, the one thing out of the strategy 2015 that always resonated a lot, and that is a big quote by Frank Apple, was always, you know, don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness. So, you know, there is no bigger mistake than not trying. And that's why my life motto basically is believe in yourself, because, you know, with the right mindset, you always have a chance. You never have a guarantee, but you always have a chance. With the wrong mindset, you don't even have a chance.
Awesome. I love that. The mindset makes a difference. So mention that, right? So a lot of strategy work, BD work, and then to the market selling for the first time, big deals. How do you do that, right? So from strategy to very hands-on to operations, how do we navigate that?
Well, I guess the key point is curiosity. You know, be curious about people, be curious about processes, be curious about what makes the business successful. And if you're curious, you can learn fast. And with that, and if you combine that with empathy, and if you have the ability to connect to your teams, then, you know, if you connect to your teams and if you're learning fast, I think then you can almost excel in almost anything you can do. And on the other hand, but eventually, of course, it's also important to have steps building on each other, you know, so that's probably one of the things. You know, it took me to turn 49 years old to have a job that somehow had a real link to the job before. And whilst I think in the early years of your career, that's a real strength and an asset, whether you should wait until you're 49 or whether maybe in the late 30s, early 40s at the right time, if I'd be able to kind of maybe change the path within my own career a slight bit, probably I would try to focus in, zoom in on what really drives my passion a slight bit earlier than I did, not regretting anything, but that's probably one piece of advice that I usually give younger people when they ask me, you know, what piece of advice would you give me?
Yeah, so you have the passion. I could see that you have the passion of the 29, so congratulations. Throughout your career, what have been some of the most challenging moments you faced at DHL?
Well, I think there has been different ones. You know, the first big challenging moment was probably when I was running that joint venture between Deutsche Post and Lufthansa on this electronic procurement things. You know, when I got there, we had a team of 30 people, and these were the days of the hockey stick business plan. So, you know, we rapidly grew to 100 people. But remember, we were a 50-50 joint venture. Both companies were basically independent. We were not within the corporate structures of any of the two corporates. So finally, you know, when the things cooled down, of course, also our momentum cooled down, and it was very clear that we needed to restructure the company and, you know, take it down from 100 people to a 50 people company again. And, you know, that was the first really dramatic experience in my life. And in a, you know, if this is a 100 people company, it's not just numbers or names, it's actually real faces, you know, it's real people, you know, and really being at the end, the ultimate guy that needed to decide who stays and who goes. That was a really, really demanding time. But on the other hand, you know, we cut the corner and, you know, the company survived and later was bought by one of the big e-procurement providers. And many of the people from then are actually very experienced leaders in that company by now. So I think it was the right thing to do, but also the right thing for the people, but it was still tough. And of course, a big second challenge, no doubt, was the whole Brexit topic, you know, where we thought we had really well prepared for the Brexit. But in the beginning, I think we struggled with two things. One was really the amount of customs clearances and amount of bonded storage we had. And the second thing was we also underestimated the data quality of our customers who suddenly needed to do customs declarations and things like that. So we had an awful 3 months in the beginning of 21. But, you know, that's the beauty, what I've learned also in my career. You know, we've been very, very successful in always going out of a crisis more strongly than we went into. And I think this can-do spirit in DHL Express always helped us to get our act together, to really work hard with our customers with a lot of sweat and with a lot of pain. But at the end, I think we, you know, we're very proud that, you know, we always got out of it stronger than before. And so we've learned a lot in that crisis. And I think our customs processes, you know, the whole process have improved dramatically. And so at the end, I think it was a good experience. But in the middle of it, I was close to crying once because things were really not good.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how did you navigate those challenges and what were the key learnings? I heard that persistence, teamwork, and what else would you share?
I guess the decisive moment for me was, and you know, we have a concept called Jemba walks, you know, go to where the action is. So actually, you know, we had one dedicated gateway for the Brexit where we were basically all the shipments from the UK going into Germany were consolidated and cleared there. And that's where basically a lot of the chaos happened. And shortly after it started, you know, I really thought, well, I'm going there, I'm looking at it firsthand. And I was really, really, really shocked. But I think this was the turning point because I really understood the full size of the problem. And then step by step, we tackled them. I put into place kind of a crisis plan and moved ourselves out of it. And then 10 weeks later, I visited the gateway again, and it looked like one of the best gateways within the DHL world. Whilst 10 weeks earlier, I thought, I've never seen a facility like that in DHL Express. So this really, I mean, that's one other learning I really took from it. You know, don't look at it from emails, don't look at it from KPIs, and really go to where the action is, get a firsthand impression and get a feeling for really what needs to be done, and listen really to the people on the shop floor where the struggle is.
Wonderful story. On the other hand, right, let's talk about the rewarding moment. What have been the most rewarding moment for you during your time at DHL?
I guess I would probably name three moments. You know, DHL Express has a very strong culture, and, you know, we're a very strong team, but also, you know, we are our own people. So, you know, after, you know, my corporate development, going to Turkey, becoming a member of the Express team, when finally, you know, they offered me the Germany job, that's when I realized, look, yes, I've really become a part of the team, and they've accepted me as an insider, not as an outsider. And so that was a very proud moment where I realized, you know, I was able to absorb the culture and become an integral part of the team, and then feeling the trust of being handed over one of the largest countries in the network. That was one of a very rewarding moment where I really felt, look, after not having a clue about Express, not having a clue about Turkey, somehow I managed to learn a lot, and I managed to engage with the company and really embrace what the company stands for. So that would be the first one. I would probably name the second one would probably be the pandemic. Very, very demanding in the first bit, but I think we really learned a lot about health and well-being and how to take care of our people and how to really give them the orientation they needed at making sure, you know, that everybody holds together. So I think the pandemic, despite, you know, being very remotely separated, besides being all virtual, but it brought us closer together as a team and made us a lot stronger and created loyalty. And not to forget, it also uplifted the image of logistics. You know, I mean, since the logistics, I think a lot more people understand that logistics is not just about cost, but it's actually about our making our world work, and, you know, has a huge impact on our daily life. First of all, you know, without logistics, there's not going to be any yeast or any pasta in the supermarket or any toilet paper. And secondly, you know, with the whole vaccine distribution and, you know, the amount of vaccines that DHL Express delivered to roughly 170 people, 170 countries all around the globe, really showed the importance. So that was a second one of the very motivational moments. And the third one was one that I've already talked about, really, you know, Germans are not the most enthusiastic people. Germans are always a bit more skeptical. And, you know, Germans have this thing about separating work and life maybe a bit more strongly than some other people, definitely than, for example, Asian communities. But so proving the case that even in Germany, you can really create an engaged team and become really a great place to work, and being also recognized as one of the best workplaces in Germany, that was another extremely rewarding moment, especially, you know, because that was not because of a great presentation or a great talk or conversation I held, but this was because of the way our people voted in the survey. So that was really, really probably the most rewarding moment of my career.
I can imagine that. So I heard a lot about the German culture, right? You obviously, you've been in different cultures. I'd like to ask, right, what are the most, so the challenge, right, you navigate through the different cultures in the organization?
Of course, you know, I mean, a company like ours with 220 countries is a very diverse place. And, you know, there is different values, different political systems, and a lot of different things. But, you know, for example, just to give a few examples, when I arrived in Turkey, probably, you know, having come from corporate development, my first few presentations were much too rational, much too logic, but were not addressing really the pride and the heart of the people. And, you know, that is, and later on, I realized that I really start moving the people when I catch them with their heart, and when I really, really, really get into the emotional piece of them, and when they get the feeling, yes, this is the good guy, this is the guy that cares for me, that's much more important, especially in a country like Turkey, than explaining the rationale behind what you do. Because And the other, for example, I remember my first day in Turkey. You know, first we were sitting together in the boardroom with the senior team. And then I said, well, look, I want to at least see the entire building. Let's walk the floors and let's meet some people, because I've always been curious. But and so we walk through the hallways. We come to the first door. Somebody opens the door. I walk through. The rest of the people walk through. We come to the second door. Somebody opens the door. We all walk through. We come to the third door. I say, well, why don't I open the door? So I opened the door. Nobody went through the door. I was like, what's happening here? And finally, you know, I needed to move the door first before they would move through, because, you know, this hierarchy plays a bit of a bigger role and things. And these things you start learning, and, you know, people want answers, not questions, you know, this and things. So, but the good thing is what I learned as well. A lot of the stuff that I've learned in Turkey, I was very hesitant to use in Germany, because I thought, look, I need to more address the brain of the people and things like that. And partially it's true, but at the end, emotion works everywhere. Maybe the wordings need to be different. You know, a sentence that would be kind of very rational in Turkey might already be emotional in Germany. And, you know, a sentence that would be emotional in Turkey would be maybe cheesy in Germany. But the mechanics work just as well. And that's why I think I've benefited a tremendous lot in how to lead people, how to engage with people during those days in Turkey, because it really changed the way I approached things and the way how I explained things. And that was really, really a bit of a life changer for me.
So I hear that culture, right? Diverse culture is one challenge. It brings wealth, right? It also is a big challenge. But I'm sure the audience would be eager to hear more about the real life studies. Can you walk us through a specific instance where DHL encountered a notable challenge? How did you and your team strategize to overcome it? And what were the outcome or result achieved?
Well, you know, maybe, you know, I think, first of all, it's important to understand about DHL, you know, we usually only take 5 minutes to strategize, and then we love to start walking, you know. So, you know, we're not the thinkers, we're probably more the doers. And we tend to, you know, we have this can-do spirit. So maybe, let's try something. If it doesn't work, we'd rather fix it or not. But you know, the key thing is the one that I've already addressed, which is the Brexit challenge, you know. And I'd realized, you know, we set up a big project beforehand. Somebody worried about it, apparently created a solution. But I wasn't involving myself to the real core of it. So after having gone there, seeing the chaos, you know, I sat together with my people very quickly, and but you know, I wasn't thinking about what's the best solution. My first thought was, who is the best guy in my team that can solve this situation now? And you know, by chance, there was a very experienced ops guy who just had gone into his well-deserved retirement. But I've called him and asked him, do you want to come back for 3 months? You know, he's not the most modern leader. No, he's more a bit of a directive leader, but he has a wealth of experience, you know. And in this chaos, you don't need a discussing. Mm. You needed somebody that had a lot of experience how to fix things, and that also was comfortable with giving some clear directions. And then, you know, after those three months, we really sorted the place. We really got our processes structured and everything. It was probably not the most engaging environment at that time, but we got the problem fixed. And afterwards, when he went back into his well-deserved retirement, we got a young guy who had been through the whole 3 months and learned a lot there, but of course from his leadership style, probably a lot more modern, a lot more engaging, a lot more collective rather than directive, and take over and take it from there. And so I think, you know, that's one of my, what I've always kind of had positive experience with. Pick the right people, make sure you understand what their plan is, but then let them execute their plan if you trust them.
So I hear a lot about action, right? Not being afraid or try new things and correct. Yes. And then team. And so I'm just trying to actually help to benefit, right, from our community, right? Pick your brain and then learn from your experience. Could you share with us how have these experiences that you share shape your perspective on supply chain management? And what are the most critical lessons the supply chain community can learn? Your challenges and successes?
I don't think there is one supply chain management. There is very different aspects of supply chain management. You know, I mean, the area I stand for, which is heavily centered around transportation, and mainly, you know, transportation of parcels and small pallets, not so much the big containers. Or, you know, we're not the typical warehouse management and guys. We're not the control tower guys. So there is different levels of supply chain management with very different complexities. And I think you need to understand on which part of the supply chain am I in order to find the right solutions. You know, if, for example, you know, if you're in the supply chain outsourcing business or in a 3PL, 4PL environment, complexity is a lot bigger, and you know, strategies need to be different. But what we do is moving goods in the fastest possible speed and the highest possible quality from A to B. So this is not rocket science. You know, we're not flying to the moon, but we have a big global machine that needs two things. It needs precision in the little pieces going in and out, because you know, 2 minutes can make a huge difference for us, because it can mean in one of our big global hubs, you're missing a connection or you're not missing a connection. And that could mean a whole day difference for the arrival date. So, you know, these stable processes, precise processes, that is one of the big thingies. And the other one is, you know, it needs people all around the globe sharing the same passion and speaking the same language. Because, you know, my team in Germany can do an amazing job and be so customer-centric and quality-driven. If, let's say, the team in Vietnam, where the shipment needs to arrive, is not sharing the same beliefs, you know, the customer is not going to be happy. So that's why it's exactly those two things where we as DHL Express, given our specific topics, we're not the brainies, we're the execution people, we're the doers, and we believe in strong, solid processes that fit to each other, and we believe in a strong, unified culture and language around the globe.
Mm, love that.
But in a supply chain business, you know, where you're a 3PL or 4PL player, this might be very different, because, you know, project management and engineering skills will have a totally different importance. You know, on the other hand, if you look at the infrastructure, we take a lot more care in building, in kind of designing our buildings, because they're there to last for the next 30 years. Whilst maybe if you're in the 3PL outsourcing business, you know, you need the building for 3-5 years, however long the contract works. So, you know, there is not one approach to supply chain. You really need to understand what is my business and what type of talents, what type of people, what type of skills do I need?
So I'm hearing that you mentioned the key, right, for success of DHL business is then efficiency, preciseness, and the speed, right? In this large DHL, right, machine, right, a huge community globally, people know that. People know the secret, but DHL is one of the most successful one. What is the secret sauce for DHL to manage it well?
Well, I believe the secret sauce is that we believe, you know, infrastructure, airplanes, automation technology, all these processes are key and they're important. Mm-hmm. But they define your right to play, but they don't make you successful. You know, in a business like ours, what really makes the difference is the people. Because, you know, basically they create the 110,000 people working for DHL Express around the globe. They create the company from scratch every single day. And you know, that's why this can-do thingy, this real, and what we call ICCC, this insanely customer-centric culture of really trying to deliver against the customer promises across different organizations is what I think makes the difference between DHL and maybe some of our competitors, you know, and their infrastructure, their planes, everything is probably at least as good as ours. But I think we feel different to our customers, first of all, in how we interact with them. And the second is, I think, the passion when something goes wrong. Something rarely goes wrong, you know. Our on-time performance is around the 97% mark. But if you're as big as us, even 3% is quite a few things that go bad, that can go wrong. But the passion we put into fixing it when things go wrong is what our customers very often tell us makes us feel different than many of our competitors.
Very interesting. I listened to the interview between my colleague Radu and Dr. Sharafi, so Yossi Sharafi, who's a very respected MIT professor. He mentioned that he would recommend, like, the young people not to try to come up with solution, but rather solve problem that will lead to success. So I think that the secret sauce of DHL is relevant to that, is related to that statement from Professor Sharafi. Thanks for sharing. So when we talk about talent, right, what advice would you give to younger talent who aspire to build a career in the supply chain industry? Well, any specific skills or mindset that you believe are essential?
It'll probably be three things, you know, and the one thing I would say first is believe in yourself, you know, have self-confidence. If you don't have self-confidence, why would somebody else trust you if you don't trust yourself? So that is the first thing. And, you know, but with this believe in yourself comes resilience. So don't be afraid to make mistakes, you know. I mean, the only recipe not to make a mistake is not to do anything, but you're not going to get anywhere. So be confident, have the right mindset. You know, this gives you an opportunity. If you look at me, for example, when I was a child, I was stuttering really badly. You know, I mean, even during my final school exams, I needed to spell out individual letters of the words because the word wouldn't want to come out. But I had a very good final exam, so I thought, you know, I'll be studying something very fancy. So I picked one of those business schools where you had to do a test, and, you know, the quota was out of 20 applicants, they took one. But they also did an interview where somebody from the university and somebody from business were interviewing you. Well, and guess what? After the interview, they declined me. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get the place at the university. So I asked them, why didn't I get it? Well, they told me, look, we want to build up the leadership elite of tomorrow on this university. And we believe the ability to speak freely is a key leadership skill. And we don't think this is the right thing for you. Well, so there I was, you know, a dream had just burst. And, you know, after 13 years of school and good grades, I felt that I've been betrayed of my life. So there was two very dark weeks. But then I didn't have a name for it at the time. But what I would call nowadays, this believe in yourself thingy started in me. And I felt, no, this is the right thing. And I'll show to them that it's the right thing. So I decided I'm not going to go to another university. I spent 1 year with several internships and other things, you know, trying to do useful stuff. And 1 year later, I went back to the same university. So, and at the interview, I told them, look, guys, I've been here last year and you didn't take me. Oh, why didn't you take me? Well, you know, as you can hear, I'm having a stuttering problem and you guys told me this is not the right school for me, but I believe it is. And so we talked for 1 hour only about the stuttering and why I think this is the right thing. Did I really convince them rationally? Probably not. But I guess they felt the passion for what I wanted to achieve. And they felt this belief in myself that I can do it. And they gave the job to me. And I think, you know, this is now, so then I graduated 93 from the school. So so probably 30 years ago now. But I think if I look back at my career, it was a good thing to go back there a second time, because my life would have for sure been different if I wouldn't have had this believe in yourself inside me and gone back there. Did I have a guarantee that they would take me? No, of course not. But I at least had a chance. And, you know, the chance worked out. So that's the first lesson. The second lesson is be curious. And, you know, and when you really try to, in the first years of your career, try to broaden the experience, try to learn as many things. And so you find really where you feel your special energy. So don't be afraid to do different challenges, to do different things. Just make a lot of experience, try different cultures, try maybe different industries, different functions, whatever. But just shop around a bit to get a feeling which is the thing that really energizes me. But then, that's probably the one thing I could have done better. You know, eventually, after maybe 10, 15 years of your career, it's also time to zoom in and to kind of build this specific edge in your CV so that later on, you know, when the pyramid gets smaller, you have this specific edge which gives you the entry key maybe into those more senior positions. So those would be the three things next to all the normal basics, be energetic, work hard, and stuff like that. But those, I think, to me, are the three differentiators.
This is very inspiring. I would definitely also benefit from that. Thanks for sharing your own story, very authentic story. So I'm sure also our audience would love the story and benefit from that. Now, so we talk about people, we talk about right talent, and then let's talk a little bit about the tech part, right? So we see that supply chain tech is booming and ChatGPT is a hot topic right now. In your opinion, what are some of the emerging trends of technology that will significantly impact the future of supply chain?
Well, of course, I mean, the first thing is this always connectedness topic. Everything is always connected, and this creates totally new opportunities. You know, we as DHL Express, we've been the first ones that invented this track and trace, you know, where you would always know where your parcel is. But this almost becomes like a commodity now. Now it's about, you know, what temperature, what condition is the parcel in. And, you know, this whole thing creates totally new opportunities, but also for us, for example, creates a bit of a challenge because it takes away a bit of a differentiation. So you can look at it as a challenge or as an opportunity. We've did it before, so let's come up with the next one. So that, to me, is one thing. The other one is definitely the one about the artificial intelligence, which will dramatically change the way we do business. You know, we've started all with a bit of RPAs and process robotics and things like that, but still, or even I remember like way back when, years back, you know, you were really proud if you programmed a little macro in Excel, which was basically, to me, the predecessor of an RPA. But now, you know, we're just about going the next steps in really trying to leverage artificial intelligence. But I think we're very early in the process. You know, of course, you know, if I think about customer service, if I think about, you know, optimizing our routings and stuff like that, you know, I see a dramatic opportunity in artificial intelligence doing that much better, much faster, much more real time than any human could have ever done it. So that's definitely the second trend. But that second trend or that challenge leads to the third one. You know, I think data becomes more and more important because, you know, even the best artificial intelligence, one piece still holds true: garbage in, garbage out. So, and what we feel, you know, we need to spend a lot more time than in the past on data quality, you know, because you know, the courier maybe knew that Schwabing is Munich. But, you know, those things, the artificial intelligence slowly also starts learning, but that is slowly moving forward. And all the old algorithms, all the RPAs and stuff, you know, they really need very good, very perfect data. Or, you know, we're investing a lot into automatic route optimization. But, you know, if your data is shitty, the route that comes out of the algorithm will be shitty. I believe also this data problem in the long run will be solved by AI. But I think in the short run, data is really still the new gold. And the better your data, the better your opportunities to leverage the technological advancements. And of course, the last one, and this is one where we probably still struggle to find the perfect bit, where we've heard some of the warehousing business and others are further already, is the topic of robotics. So, you know, which is also a hot and key topic. And, you know, logistics, let's face it, is a very manual, labor-intensive piece. So robotics is an important role to play. And we have some applications of that in the DHL Express world. But so far, in our applications, the robots still struggle to compete with the humans, either on accuracy or on speed. But I'm sure that will very soon change as well, from either how to put parcels on a conveyor, or if you think about the letters, how to sort the letters and stuff like that. So we're experimenting a lot with that. But so far, we have good applications where the robot assists the human, but we have limited success with replacing the robot with humans. But I think in any way, I believe we have actually an exciting 10, 20, 25 years ahead of us, where a lot of the technology is more about enabling humans rather than replacing humans. Whether that will hold true in 30, 40 years, I have no clue. But for the next decade or so, I think it's much more about assisting the human rather than replacing the human.
Sounds very exciting. Last week I was in Munich in the transport logistic fair, and I was very impressed, right, how logistic transportation supply chain have changed and evolved from the traditional blue collar, hardworking manual work to be innovative, really, then also consulting driven, become very sexy. So compared to other sector, very attractive to young talent. So very exciting. Marcus, thank you so much.
Because you know, just the week before the Munich Fair, we had in Valencia our big, the era of sustainable logistics event. So the first really cross-industry conference solely focusing on the sustainability topic. And we were really overwhelmed, first of all, by the resonance of the people and the breadth of people we got there. I think, you know, this is another big topic, you know, that we didn't really touch in so much detail, you know, how to make this industry more sustainable. At the end, you know, I think we're an industry that really brings the people closer together. That's why we call ourselves connecting people, improving lives. But I think the challenge is making it sustainable, and which I think, and you know, if I would be a young person, that would really attract me to the logistics industry, to be part of this game changer of making a making an industry that really makes the world a better place, because it distributes wealth around the globe and really creates employment, not just in the big countries, but everywhere around the world. But making that industry sustainable and more green, that would be really exciting me if I'd be 30 years younger.
Yes, I think this is also a story for supply chain and logistic executive to tell, to attract young talent to join this industry, especially the female community, that we see that we are really, it's in high demand. We need more diversity in this industry. So it's up for you, right, us, to tell the supply chain story to attract young talent. Thank you, Marcus, for very generously sharing your insight and story. I could keep you the whole day talking, but I'm aware that you're very busy and time is very limited. And thank you for your time again, and good luck with your new role starting in June.
Well, thank you so much, Faye, and it was a big pleasure, and time was just flying by with this very interesting conversation. So it was my big pleasure to be here and part of your show.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to go to alcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest update first. If you're listening to a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, we would appreciate the kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help. Thank you very much.